Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS, I Am the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, my colleague and co-host and friend, and we turn to the United States Navy and its allies and its adversaries. I welcome Jim Holmes of the U.S. Naval War College, professor, a veteran of surface warfare, writing most recently at National Interest about the future, in this case, the future of the Indo-Pacific and the question of the Navy of the Republic of India. Beforehand, however, I'd like to call upon the professor to comment on a line written many decades ago by John Foster Dulles before he was Eisenhower's Secretary of State, when he was still a partisan attorney in New York State. He published a book called War or Peace in 1950. And he writes, chapter 19, The Role of the Military. When the world thermometer registers not war, not peace, it is hard to decide whether to follow military judgments or political judgments. Professor, a very good evening to you. I agree with that sentence. And where are we in the not war, not peace? How to understand the apparent confrontation, and yet nobody's opened fire? Good evening to you, Jim.
Hey, John. Hi, Gordon. A pleasure as always. Yeah, I mean, that's a very good quotation, and I would agree with it. It's very hard to work to know in an era of great power strategic competition, as the Pentagon is calling, whether political judgments or military judgments should prevail when there's a debate between the two. I think our age is not unlike the age of Dulles and Dwight D. Eisenhower and so forth, and in the early 50s as the Cold War was starting to take shape. I think it's very hard to look ahead, from a civil military relations standpoint, I mean, the answer is pretty clear. Politics in a system like ours prevails. And I think that's especially important today because we are using the military to signal resolve, to signal capability to adversaries such as China and Russia, so forth, and also to allies that we would like to give comfort to, that we will be there in order to keep our commitments to them. So I would tend to err on the side of politics prevailing, using military instruments wisely to do those things, to signal resolve, to signal capability, and so forth. I think there's no escaping it.
There isn't that other quote, if you want peace, prepare for war. And now I come to your article, The National Interest. 10 Indian Navy warships now patrol the waters to the subcontinent, to India's west, especially in and around the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Aden, the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. What does that tell us about India's integrating its navy in with other navies, Jim?
There are actually two questions in there. For the first one, what does it tell us about India's navy? India's navy has been on the rise for quite some time. It's been a fitful rise to regional eminence, but the Indians are shooting for a fleet of about 150 ships, which will largely remain concentrated in the Indian Ocean, making it a force with significant heft. So that's something to be welcomed, really, for the United States. I mean, with the more that India can police its own backyard in the Indian Ocean, that's less that we need to do in the Indian Ocean, which is a good thing. As far as the second question you asked was about integrating India's navy with others, and that goes to the hearts, or sort of to the nature of post-independence India, which is pretty standoffish in a sense. This is a founder of the non-aligned movement. We did not have always a great relationship with India during the Cold War. We were in the habit of withholding spare parts for U.S. supplied weaponry at critical junctures, and Indians really they remember that sort of thing, and I think that makes them yes, we have a good relationship with them, but as far as actually integrating, the Indian Navy has stayed outside the U.S. led coalition in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. So I think that's the pattern that will almost certainly continue unless China really becomes bellicose and really becomes overbearing in the Indian Ocean. But I don't think we're there yet.
The word interoperability. So you would say that is not true for the Indian Navy and the U.S. Navy.
Well, interoperability is, in a sense, that's kind of a technical concept. That's the ability of armed services to work together, whether having compatible hardware, compatible procedures, speaking the same language, which is a good thing, since we in the Indians are English speaking. But But that's a little bit separate from alliance relations as far as having a formal alliance commitment. Yes, we have agreements with the Indians now on logistics and so forth, which is a good thing. But again, I simply can't see the Indians coming integrating themselves into a U.S.-led alliance, again, unless China becomes so domineering that there's no way out.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
Jim, because China still relies upon the sea route to get oil and gas and other commodities from the Middle East to its ports on the east coast of China, this buildup of the Indian Navy, therefore, seems to be even more important to China than our Navy on the periphery, because it would seem that if India and China were at odds, that India could cut off that critical flow of material.
Yeah, I think China does worry about that. They worry about the free passage through the Strait of Malacca, and then as you point out, that sea route into the Persian Gulf through the Arabian Sea passes along the Indian west coast. So that gives India not only interior lines facing out against China, basically the ability to move around within the region and counter Chinese moves. But again, it just positions them astride that vital route for oil and gas coming from the Persian Gulf. There used to be a joke. We were wondering, you know, 10, 15 years ago about whether China was going to create a base network in the Indian Ocean in particular. This was the idea of the string of pearls that China would seek out naval bases around the Indian periphery. But there was one Indian foreign minister who had a great joke, and he said, "Hey, in the game of Clue, the string of pearls is not a very deadly weapon because you can cut it so easily." And I think he was referring to that leverage that India has by virtue of that central position in the Indian Ocean, if it has a serious navy.
Jim, recently an admiral who has experience in the South China Sea was promoted, I think that's what we call it, to become defense minister, suggesting that the PLA Navy now has, if not primacy, certainly a larger role in the planning of war planning for China and also for confrontation with the U.S. Is the PLA Navy rated a peer with the U.S. Navy at this point? What is the thinking, Jim?
Well, there's two questions in there as well. Certainly, you're right that elevating a naval officer to head up the Chinese armed forces is a serious signal to the force and also to the region and to the world about the standing of the PLA Navy. And I think I don't know whether that means the PLA Navy is now the senior service within the People's Liberation Army, but it certainly means that awareness of maritime concerns is very much a thing. And this has been some time coming. I mean, for example, just think about the name of the Chinese Armed Forces. For a long time, in fact, until recent years, it was the People's Liberation Army, and the Army, Air Force, and other services were subsumed within that overall name. Some years ago, the Chinese military started started disaggregating itself. For example, they now talk about the PLA Army, suggesting that the Army is a peer service of the others. That would have been unthinkable until recent years. So there's that. As far as whether the PLA Navy is a peer of the U.S. Navy now, that's sort of where the rub is. That's where the debate is. And I would say yes. Or rather, I would say Chinese sea power taken as a whole is a peer of the United States Navy and its allies. And what I mean by that is I'm talking about the PLA Navy fleet, the surface fleet, submarines, and so forth, backed up by shore-based sea power in the form of tactical aircraft, strategic aircraft, the strategic rocket force, all bearing anti-ship missiles built to strike out to sea and add their own destructive potential to that of the Navy. So when you look at Chinese sea power as a composite land and sea force, at that point you get a force to be reckoned with.
Gordon, you have a question.
So carrying forward on that, if you're talking about the South China Sea, where China is able to perhaps bring more force than the United States, if you're talking about the Middle East, as we have recently been, then it doesn't seem that China is able to bring the ships with the same force the United States, largely because of logistical reasons. And I think you could probably say that's true around the world, even though China is getting bases in new locations. It just doesn't seem that it has the logistical base to project force around the world.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, I think we in concert with India still outweigh China in the Indian Ocean, as you point out. There's always talk about China seeking out bases in places like the South Atlantic, or the African East Coast, and places like that. But you're right. I think they, and I think this is actually an admirable thing. It shows self-discipline on the part of the PLA and the Chinese Communist Party. They understand what their priorities are, and their priorities are in East Asia. It's Taiwan Strait, it's the East China Sea, South China Sea, and therefore they've kept their military forces more or less grouped together, concentrated together in order to be able to outweigh the United States and its allies if we get in a scrap with them in East Asia. So I think the logistical piece will come if they settle things in East Asia, but I don't think they're there yet.
Less than 30 seconds, Jim. Is the Indian Navy a constable or a strongman? Can you make a choice at this point?
Well, that's pretty clear right now. What they're doing in response to threats to shipping in the Indian Ocean and in the Red Sea, I mean, that's very much a constabulary mission, rendering succor to ships that have been hit by Houthi missiles. Protecting Indian flag vessels. I mean, these are all very much much police duties, and I think that's where India is.
Jim Holmes of the U.S. Naval War College, professor, writing at the National Interest. Gordon Chang, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.